Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the Voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Agriculture Report and Science in the News, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome to the program that helps you learn and improve your American English. Today, we have a special show about important communications. We will tell about a ship that was once used to get the truth into the Soviet Union over 50 years ago. You are listening to As It Is, and we are coming to you from VOA in Washington. Most Americans may have never heard about a Coast Guard ship called the USS Courier. The Courier also may be unfamiliar to people in Eastern Europe or the former Soviet Union. But between 1952 and 1964, the ship floated near the Greek island of Rhodes. During that period, it broadcast thousands of hours of Voice of America programs to the Soviet Union and its allies. Since then, people who served on the ship have held anniversary reunions to celebrate their work. Recently, they gathered at the United States Coast Guard Academy in New London, Connecticut. The Academy has an exhibit honoring the Courier.
In the battle against communism, the Courier, a ship without guns, goes into battle armed with the greatest weapon of all, truth.
Cold War newsreel reports about the partnership between VOA and the Coast Guard sound dated to some people, but the struggle between the Soviet Union and Western countries was very real. Bob Marriott was part of the USS Courier's Coast Guard crew.
We were real proud of our job. We got through to people that couldn't hear the truth, and we kept working to get that message across, and it made us feel good to know that they got the truth from somewhere that in their native countries was censored.
In addition to news, listeners could enjoy VOA's cultural and music programs. Music great Louis Armstrong made this station identification on VOA's Jazz Hour program with Willis Conover.
This is the Voice of America. Washington, D.C.
The USS Courier had broadcast equipment that was more powerful than land-based radio stations at the time. The Soviet Union worked hard to jam or interfere with the broadcasts. Bob Marriott says making sure VOA had a clear signal was, in his words, like playing a game of cat and mouse.
We were matching our wits against the guy in Russia that was trying to jam us. And we took pride in having a couple extra frequencies available so that when he lined up on our frequency on that particular receiver, we clicked him off and got another one and kept the program going. We were the tip of the bayonet. It felt real good.
Unlike most military ships, the Courier did not carry heavy weaponry. Navy ships would come to its aid if there was a need. Maria Lothar was born in Greece. She moved to Rhodes as a refugee and later married a member of the U.S. Coast Guard. She says the Courier, its VOA crews, and their money were important to the economy of the island.
We didn't have enough money to have food on the table. And all of a sudden, the ship appears, And the money started flowing. But above all, it was the dignity of the people that was saved. The American spirit was absolutely unbelievable.
The families of Coast Guard and VOA employees lived on Rhodes and became friends with the islanders. The father of Denise Clemens served as an engineer on the Courier. She remembers growing up on the island and getting a lot of attention from a young Greek man.
I had a boy who was crazy about me, and that was because of those VOA broadcasts, because he wanted a ticket to America, and he decided I was his ticket. And so every time I'd walk anywhere, he'd be riding his bicycle around and around me singing, "You Are My Destiny" by Paul Anka at the top of his lungs. He might not know any other English, but he knew those words.
That boy never did marry Denise Clemens. For their part, the U.S. Coast Guardsmen and their families consider themselves winners many times over. Many of them truly enjoy the Coast Guard Academy exhibit about the Courier. As one former officer said of the show, "It almost makes you cry. We made lifelong friends and comrades, and we helped win the Cold War without firing a shot. Not bad. Not bad at all." That is a musical tribute to the United States Coast Guard, whose motto is Semper Paratus. That is Latin for always ready or always prepared. It is called patriotic music because it tells a musical story of the brave men and women in the Coast Guard who serve our country. If you were to visit the United States this week, you would probably hear a lot of patriotic songs like that one, because this is the week of the 4th of July, our Independence Day. It remembers how we fought a battle against England to become an independent country in 1776. The 4th of July holiday is a big one in the United States. Many families take a vacation from their jobs all week and travel long distances to see America and have fun. Since we are in the middle of summer, many of us go to the beach to enjoy the sun and swim in the ocean. On the 4th itself, many Americans have picnics. We cook food outside over an open fire. You can almost always find people eating hamburgers and hot dogs and sharing their food with friends and family. At local swimming pools, there are often games for the children to play. Later in the day, many people enjoy ice cream or slice open a juicy watermelon to help cool down after a day in the hot sun. And just about dark, there are large fireworks displays. Here in Washington, D.C., just outside the VOA studios on the National Mall, is one of the biggest fireworks displays in the whole country. Hundreds of thousands of people wait and watch for the colorful explosions that light up the Capitol building, the White House, and the many monuments that are nearby. So if you plan to visit the United States next year, consider being here in Washington on the 4th of July. It really is a special time. Well, that's all for this edition of As It Is. We thank you for spending some time with us today and hope you will visit our website often to learn about our world as it is.
The Agriculture Report is next, followed by Science in the News. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Agriculture Report. Farmers are increasingly using high-tech products to lower their costs, increase the amount of crops they grow, and add to their profits. But they are not just using high-tech machines. They also now employ services that gather information about their farms to improve their businesses. The Finrock family grows corn and soybeans on about 3,200 hectares in the Midwestern state of Illinois. Shelley Finrock and her husband use technology to operate the large farm with just their son and one employee. But Ms. Finrock says technology cannot control everything.
Weather is probably the most important thing and the most uncontrollable thing.
She says weather affects every part of a farm, including the soil, animals that eat the crops, and crop production. She says all these affect profit. The soil in a field near the farmhouse looks and sounds dry. But below the surface, it has enough water to let corn seeds begin to grow. The amount of rain that falls can differ greatly from field to field on the farm. The Finrocks farm in 5 counties. Checking water levels and other conditions on such a large spread can take a lot of travel time. So, for the past year, Ms. Finrock has been testing an online service called Climate Basic. The service sends her a text message very early in the morning. It tells her how much rain fell on her farms in the past 24 hours. It measures to the hundredths of a centimeter. She says the service has worked so far.
We have a farm from where we're sitting right now, just a mile south, and it'll say it was dry, and you got a good half-inch rain, and you go down there, and it's dry. So it was a pretty good tool to use.
Tristan Diogoval works at Climate Corporation, which developed the Climate Basic program.
We are dealing every day with more than 10 million points for precipitation, updated on an hourly basis.
Mr. Diogoval says the company uses data from the National Weather Service and other sources,
including radar, rain gauges, and satellites, to have the best picture of the rainfall on a field-per-field basis.
Climate Corporation released a more complex version of its program this year called Climate Pro. It hopes the program will help farmers decide what to plant and when to use chemicals that improve growth and kill insects. The program will even tell them how much money they might make. And that's the VOA Learning English Agriculture Report. I'm Christopher Cruz.
From VOA Learning English, This is Science in the News. I'm Mario Ritter. Today, Bob Doty and Pat Bodner provide a short guide to first aid.
Doctors in hospital emergency rooms often see accidental poisonings. A frightened parent arrives with a child who swallowed a cleaning liquid. Or perhaps the harmful substance is a medicine. Or it might be a product meant to kill insects. These are common causes of accidental poisoning. In cases like this, seek medical help as soon as possible. Save the container of whatever caused the poisoning, and look on the container for information about anything that stops the effects of the poison. Save anything expelled from the mouth of the victim. That way, doctors can examine it.
In the past, some people forced poisoning victims to empty the stomach. They used a liquid, syrup of ipecac, to do this. But a leading medical organization no longer advises parents to keep syrup of ipecac. The American Academy of Pediatrics says some poisons can cause additional damage when they come back up the throat.
Millions of people know how to give abdominal thrusts to save a person choking on something trapped in the throat. The American Red Cross says a rescuer should first hit the person on the back 5 times between the shoulder bones. These back blows may ease the choking. If the airway is still blocked, the Red Cross suggests pushing hard 5 times along the victim's abdomen. The abdomen is the area between the chest and the hip bones. You can do these abdominal thrusts by getting directly behind a sitting or standing person. Put your arms around the victim's waist. Close one hand to form a ball. Place it over the upper part of the stomach, below the ribs. Place the other hand on top. Then push forcefully inward and upward. Repeat the abdominal thrusts until the object is expelled from the mouth.
For someone in late pregnancy or who is very fat, place your hands higher than with normal abdominal thrusts. Place the hands at the base of the breastbone, just above the place where the lowest ribs join. Then begin pushing, as with other victims. The American Heart Association suggests another method in this case. The group advises chest thrusts instead of abdominal thrusts. For chest thrusts, put your arms under the victim's arms and your hands on the center of the victim's chest.
Even if you are the person choking, you can still help yourself. Place a closed hand over the middle of your abdomen, just above your waist. Take hold of that hand with your other hand. Find a hard surface, like a chair, and rest your body on it. Then push your closed hand in and up. Red Cross experts say taking these steps can save many lives. But they also say abdominal thrusts are not for people who have almost drowned. They say using the method could delay other ways to restart breathing in the victim.
CPR is cardiopulmonary resuscitation. It forces air into the lungs and pumps blood and oxygen to the brain. Doctors say CPR greatly increases the chances that a person whose heart stops will survive. It increases the chances that he or she will suffer little or no brain damage. The American Heart Association suggests two ways of helping. One combines the use of hands to pump the victim's chest with rescue breathing. The other method is called hands-only CPR.
Hands-only is for people who are unwilling or unable to perform rescue breathing. Some people fear infection. Others say they are afraid of making the patient worse. But an expert in emergency medicine says a person cannot be worse than dead. Dr. Michael Sayer works at Ohio State University. He strongly urges people in contact with a victim to take action.
The American Heart Association tells how to take that action. It says you can recognize a person needing CPR because the person has collapsed. He or she is unconscious, unable to communicate or react to surroundings or speech. His or her skin has lost color. The person is not breathing. If such conditions describe the situation, chances are the heart has stopped beating. You should act by calling for help or sending someone else. Even if you cannot do mouth-to-mouth rescue breathing, you can perform hands-only CPR. You can do chest compressions that help to keep blood flowing to the brain, heart, and other organs. To perform the compressions, place one hand over the other and press firmly on the center of the victim's chest. Push down about 5 centimeters. Aim for 100 compressions each minute. Dr. Sayer says you do not need a measuring stick or a timing device.
If the heart does not start beating, continue with chest compressions until help arrives. For a choking victim who is unconscious with no heartbeat, clear the airway first. Then do chest compressions. Dr. Sayer suggests that medical workers do both the breathing method and chest compressions. He says some victims, including babies, need the mouth-to-mouth breathing with the compressions. Still, the doctor says it is better to do just chest compressions than to do nothing. CPR is not difficult to learn. Many organizations teach it.
Most CPR training now includes how to use an automated external defibrillator, or AED. Defibrillators use electric shocks to correct abnormal heartbeats that can lead to sudden death. Such devices are found increasingly in public places like airports, restaurants, and office buildings. A recorded voice on the AED guides the user. The voice provides detailed information about what to do. The defibrillator of today has developed from the first defibrillators. Medical historians say the devices appeared late in the 19th century.
In the 1920s, American Claude Beck performed the first surgical operations to repair damaged hearts. Dr. Beck worked at what is now called Case Western Reserve University School of Medicine in Ohio. Another doctor, Carl J. Wiggers, had kept laboratory animals with heart stoppage alive by massaging their hearts. Then he followed this rubbing with electrical defibrillation. This led Claude Beck in his efforts to help return normal heart actions to human patients. In 1947, Dr. Beck saved a patient with a defibrillator device for the first time. The doctor's success led others to further develop the method and device. Today, small, movable AEDs can identify heart rhythms and produce electricity to treat victims of heart stoppage.
Bacteria can enter the body through even the smallest cut in the skin. So medical experts advise people to treat all wounds. Clean the cut with soap and water, then cover the wound while it heals. The Mayo Clinic Health Centers suggest several steps if bleeding is severe. First, if possible, have the person lie down and raise the legs. Remove dirt from the wound and press on it with a clean cloth or piece of clothing. If you cannot find anything clean, use your hand. Keep putting pressure on the wound until the bleeding stops or medical help arrives. Do not remove the cloth if the blood comes through it. Instead, put another cloth on top and continue pressure. If the bleeding does not stop with direct pressure, put pressure on the artery that carries blood to the wound.
In the past, people were advised to stop severe bleeding with a tourniquet. This device is made with a stick and a piece of cloth or a belt. But experts now say tourniquets are dangerous because they can crush blood passages and nerves. If a wound seems infected, let the victim rest. Physical activity can spread the infection. Treat the wound with a mixture of salt and water until medical help arrives. Add 9.5 milliliters of salt to each liter of boiled water. Place a clean cloth in the mixture, and then put the cloth on the wound. But be sure not to burn the skin.
To learn more about first aid, ask a hospital or organization like a Red Cross or Red Crescent Society for information. Training may be offered in your area. If you know first aid methods, you can be calmer and more helpful in case of emergency.
This Science in the News program was written by Geraldine Watson. Our producer was June Sims. I'm Mario Ritter. Listen again next week for more news about science on The Voice of America.